have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
Welcome on in, everyone, to the newest episode of the Boardroom Post-Nebraska. This is one of your hosts, Maddie. I'm here joined with Sam, Josh, and Johnny. We're also joined by our favorite walk-on, Tyler, to discuss, whatever it is we just watched. Now, I think the best way to really go into it is just maybe do like a good, a bad, and the ugly. I guess we're going to start with the good, Tyler. So go ahead, take it away. Let us know. What was the good from today?
Well, let me just start by saying I would have had more fun after two Fridays ago. If we're going to do this Friday night edition, after the Iowa game, that was a lot of fun.
That was fun, yeah.
Tonight feels a little, a win's better than a loss, but yeah, that was not a pleasant evening of Illini basketball. But to your question, the good is pretty obvious. I mean, you have Iowa DeSumo. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, 31 points, 6 assists, 3 rebounds. He closes out the first overtime. He brings us back from, we're down 6 with 3 to play, and he basically gets us back to even, blocks Nebraska's shot to send us to overtime, scores everything in the overtime, and just delivers it in the end. I mean, that's an All-American, and that's what an All-American does. Big time players, big time plays, and all that, you know. So without question, that's the good. The bad, I mean, it's Nebraska. This is a team that lost 25 straight Big Ten games, and they took us to overtime. I tweeted this during the game. The fact that we went up 5 in the second half and proceeded to give up a 12-2 run to that team just really bothered me. I mean, I thought this team was kind of past that, that level of falling asleep and not having that focus for a full 40 minutes. So that's the bad. And the ugly, I think, is 18 second-chance points. I'm looking at the box score here. 18 second-chance points. I'm no math major, but that's like almost 20% of Nebraska's points comes on second-chance points. I mean, of their total points comes on second chances. And we're supposed to be a good rebounding team. That's just, again, that's a lack of focus. So that's kind of my thoughts. But, again, a win's a win. So, as they say.
And it wasn't like it was a trap game. Like, people would like to say that it was a trap game. It's not a trap game. It's not like a mediocre Big Ten team who's coming on the road and we might like be looking ahead in our schedule. We don't have a big opponent, I guess, until we play Ohio State and Michigan, which is at the end of the season. So like, it wasn't a trap game whatsoever. And we're going on the road to the 150th ranked KenPom team. It's just ridiculous that it even got to this point.
Yeah. I'm not buying that trap game nonsense. Like you said, I mean, that's a team that you should put away early, put away often, and never look back. I mean, the fact that it was a game for the entire 40-45 minutes is just really disappointing. And again, I shouldn't belabor it too much because, you know, obviously it would be a much different conversation had that been a loss, but, you know, that was not a number one seed performance. And there was a lot of talk this week about what do we need to do to be a number one seed? Well, I think not have to go to overtime to beat Nebraska would be my first answer to that question.
Yeah, and I think Robert even tweeted, like, there are teams who are slated to be a 16 seed that are worse ranked in net and KenPom than Nebraska. So imagine how we'd be feeling if that was our first tournament game and you had to take a 16 seed to overtime. We'd be pretty nervous.
Yeah.
So does this change the expectation of anything? I understand, like, we still won the game, and it's still a Big Ten team. You can't convince me that playing, like, a UMBC or, like, any mid-major in the first round, like a 116, is the same as playing a Nebraska, no matter what their RPI or their net or their KenPom is. But does this change expectations moving forward? Because we've been up and down the whole year about what those expectations are.
I don't think it changes expectations, but it doesn't change the narrative either that you have the two, best teams in the country by a long shot in Gonzaga and Baylor. And then you have the next, 8 to 10 spots are just a bag of teams that you could shake up and dump out. But what this does make Illinois fans fearful of is, you know, no matter how good the season has been, you come out with that kind of focus and you're not making out of the round of 32. I mean, you know, if you end up with a one or a two seed, which this doesn't change that dynamic, and you're still going to be, you know, a top six or seven KenPom team. You'll probably drop a couple spots tonight, you know, with that performance, but you're still in line for a top four seed. But you come out with that focus, you're not going to make it anywhere near to get even a chance to play Baylor and Gonzaga. So I think that's the biggest thing. It's just it puts that angst in Illinois fans. You know, we're always kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, and now you're like, well, that Nebraska game, that Maryland game, it's always kind of hanging out there somewhere, and I need to see us dominate a team that is worse than us, I mean, on every level, for a full 40 minutes without having these episodes of I don't know, what do you want to say, of ineptitude that you just can't have if you fancy yourself as a Final Four contender. So I need to see a domination on Tuesday against Northwestern to kind of cleanse my palate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just feels like with this game,
we need your energy, Sam.
We need the energy. Hey, we won. Can we just time out? Okay.
What did I just
watch?
We
won. At least we won. Let's get some energy here. It's a Friday night. Our weekend isn't ruined by Illinois losing.
Well,
to
I wasn't about to make a positive comment.
Wait, one second. Tyler, you texted me before the game saying, like, disclaimer, I'm going to have a few adult beverages. I feel like this game sobered you up pretty quick.
Turned
just like
into more beverages.
There's no amount of alcohol.
That was a four-beer game, so yeah.
Yes.
And one more for overtime.
That should have been a two-beer game. That was a four-beer game.
Wow.
Only four? I was going to say, I feel like this game, who else? Maybe Penn State for a little bit, Maryland. There's just like this uncomfortable feeling when we don't pull away in the second half where it feels like the other team can tell, like, these guys are, like, every time, like, the other team makes a shot to keep themselves in the game or we miss a shot to pull away. It just feels like more eerie, like, ugh, like we just cannot pull away. And I feel like the other teams like smell the fear almost.
Agreed. But this is, again, this is a team that had lost 25 straight Big Ten games. They're playing their third game in 5 days. We take them to overtime. They should have been gassed from the beginning. And the energy that you needed to run this team off the floor wasn't there, and that's disappointing. But I don't want to get away from the fact that, yes, we should – it was a win, and it would be a different conversation had Io not brought us back in that game. It's just – it's hard to not look forward and see, well, is a performance like this always kind of hiding around the corner with this team? Because we've seen it far too many times.
Yeah, you do contrast that with the Indiana game in overtime. And let me just say, thank God we had Io this time, because we could have been looking at a very rough performance because he pretty much carried us through that overtime. And with the missed free throws from Kofi, that was very frustrating and very – you just feel helpless watching at home when miss after miss. And that huge, like, four-point swing where he has the dunk that gets called a foul on us, and then they make two free throws. It was – that even that overtime wasn't smooth sailing.
Just to continue off of that, we had 5 bench points the whole game.
Who were they?
It's all Curbelo, I think.
It was all Coleman Hawkins.
Coleman hit a three, and he had a two-pointer. One foul, 5 points, 2 for 5 from the field.
Yeah, so it's just a very telling thing where if our bench isn't going, you can kind of see that it's going to be a rough game. And, like, you need some points from Georgie. You need Curbelo to at least play better all around. He's not our go-to scorer, but he needs to have more assists. He needs to play better on defense.
The book is out on Curbelo, unfortunately, and he's going to have to adjust to that. Like, they know what his game is, and he's going to have to figure that out. But, yes, the bench points are a telling sign. It's the Kofi and Io show. It's the Kofi and Io.
Yeah, tonight it was. The bench was a myth tonight. It was a mirage. There was nothing. I mean, really, the entire supporting cast was a mirage tonight. I'm not sure, except for those Trent Frazier free throws late, if anyone besides Iowa Kofi scored in the last, what, five minutes of regulation and all of overtime. I mean, I don't have the play-by-play in front of me, but I don't remember.
Maybe an
basket.
Adam Miller shot, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's...
yeah, we got lucky that our stars were able to perform. At least one good thing you can also take away is we are kind of in first place in the Big Ten now. We have 10 Big Ten wins. So yeah. At some point, you're just stacking Big Ten wins when yes, you're 10 right. and 3. Michigan is 8-1. So, like, when you look at games back, you're even.
Right. Say what you want about KenPom and dropping in those rankings. It gives you, like you said, a win that will help you ultimately, hopefully, win the Big Ten.
Exactly.
In conference. So like, a win is a win.
You can't take that away from us, even if it wasn't a win that we wanted.
Right.
I'm trying to put myself into one of our listeners' shoes who's listening to us be extremely negative right now and be like, come on, we won the game and that's it. Like,
are they listening to this after like the Michigan game next week when we just beat Michigan? Maybe that's why they're so negative.
Right. Yeah. I'm confused.
Or whenever we like, they're listening it so far in the future. Like, why were you guys so negative?
You watch the game and it's just like, we have to be negative. There's nothing... It's just like you played such a bad team. I want to be positive and give cheerful like takes, but like I can't.
I guess the only like meatball take in me is like this is college basketball. Like this just happens in college basketball. And no, it probably doesn't happen to like legitimate Final Four contenders. But that's my only like saving grace here. It's like, oh, it's college basketball. Sometimes 18 to 22 year olds just put up dud games. And you have to find a way to win. Like when Illinois was a Trent three-pointer from beating Gonzaga a couple years ago. We had no business being in that game.
Yeah, that was at the start of the season, though, to be like this deep into Big Ten play. Ugh.
That's true.
Yeah, and you're not in Hawaii. This was like a Big Ten road game.
Trent feels himself in Hawaii. It's just stats.
That being said, though, KenPom just updated, and we moved from fourth to sixth. So
yeah,
It's not like right. a huge drop by any means. We're still ahead of Ohio State.
It means you go from one seed to two seed technically.
Iowa, but like the committee doesn't. Right, crossing hairs.
Iowa took the lead on us. Hi, haters.
Tyler, you mentioned that you know listeners are like, why are these guys so negative about it? You know, we won the game. So if for that fan, let's at least highlight the positives. I mean, this is our 10th Big Ten win, and. For a team that didn't scratch the 500 mark in conference for almost a decade, you know, it's this at the very least assures you of a 500 Big Ten record,
you could probably lose out and still make the tournament.
You could lose out and make the tournament. You're absolutely right.
We're in, boys. We're in.
Let's not find out.
Yeah, I'd like to point out too. John Gross never had a 10-win Big Ten season. 9-9 was his best record.
Yeah, I was going to say this is our second ten win season in Big Ten play since we went to school in 2014.
Yeah.
And Brad Underwood has the best record in the Big Ten. We have Brad Underwood in Illinois have the best record in the Big Ten from last year, counting last year to this point. You know, I think it's like 23-10, and that's the best record in the Big Ten over the last two seasons. So again, these are good days. We should be happy as Illinois fans to complain about a loss to Nebraska on the road. So don't get me wrong about that. It's just there's that narrative, but then there's a narrative this team has higher goals than that, and a performance like this makes you doubt what this team's ceiling is, because that's disappointing. But to the point that was made earlier, these are 18 to 22 year olds, and yes, outside of Gonzaga and Baylor, you are going to have some letdown games. But it's kind of nice when you have two All-Americans that you can lean on in games like this when things aren't going well, and that's going to happen in the tournaments. You're going to win six games. There's going to be a game like this. And you're going to need your All-Americans to win it for you. So it's nice to know that you have that in your back pocket when needed. Break class when necessary.
Speaking of All-Americans winning it, Kofi didn't exactly do that with his free throws. So I feel like we sort of have an eternal debate going on as it pertains to free throws, and Kofi's often at the center of this debate. So I want to get your thoughts on this, Tyler, as a former player. How much of free throw struggles for someone like Kofi are mental, how much of it is practice, how much of it is size of his hand? I'm genuinely curious if that is something that plays into it for a big man, or what do you think is impacting that?
It's physics. I was going to say exactly what you said. It's the size of the hands makes such a big difference. If you could imagine like shooting a volleyball compared to a basketball, that's what Kofi's shooting like. You know, his hands are so big, and of course there are big men who shoot the ball well, but you know, that's his mechanics aren't great, So I think it's more just a mechanical thing. I don't think that it's a mental thing. I think he has, you know, maybe tonight a little bit of that. He started to aim the ball a little bit. But as much as anything, he just doesn't have naturally good form. He was never trained, you know, and came up in that, and that was never an emphasis of his development. So, yeah, I don't think he's mentally soft or anything along those lines. He just has form that I think will betray him, you know, whether it's in the first 5 minutes of the game or in the last 5 minutes of the game. He's a 60% foul shooter, and I think that's what he would be if he shot 10 shots in overtime or 10 shots in regulation. So,
yeah, that makes sense. I think one thing we also should look back on, like, I guess while reflecting on this season, is just how lucky we are to have two All-American guys like that, Nio and Kofi. Like, I was 9 years old during the 2005 team, and I didn't understand how unusual it was to have D, Darren, and Luther all on the same team. So I think even when in a game where you don't lose, to just take a step back and say, wow, we are so lucky that we get to watch Iodesumu play every week. Like,
savor it, man, savor it. Because
wow, yeah, go ahead.
I get really angry during games. I mean, I'm throwing things, my dog runs away from the room, and it's just a nightmare. And that will happen whenever this season ends. I will be an absolute mess from start to finish and in a rage fest afterwards. But after it all settles down, I will be able to look back upon this season and the last season with fond memories, because it's really been a privilege to be able to not only watch this team, but be able to kind of to cover it in a way, and from a media standpoint. So as a fan as well, it's don't forget this season, because it's really been special to watch these two play over the last two seasons, regardless of what happens from now until March.
You kind of just brought it up. We haven't talked to you since the beginning of the season, so like you've covered a few games by now. What's it like being at the game?
Weird. I mean, I think anyone would say that. It's just a bizarre dynamic. You can hear the fact that what you can hear, how the teams have adapted to kind of creating their own energy and their own cheerleading section, hearing what every coach says, even on any end, the fact that the announcers aren't there, it's just weird. I mean, it's still a privilege to be there, and the intensity still shines through in these games. I mean, you see it, but yeah, I'll never get used to this, watching games with no crowds. It's just bizarre.
Well, two questions I have. Who is the walk-on player that's the loudest? Who represents you the most?
And why is it Edgar Padilla?
No. Is it Brandon Leib?
It's
Connor Sullivan.
It's not a walk-on. It's Coleman Hawkins. He is by far the most vocal guy on the bench, with little comments throughout the game. He's the guy that you hear the most. I mean, you hear a random comment, you look over, it's clearly Coleman Hawkins. So, yeah.
Love that spice from him. He was flexing after that three-pointer that he made tonight.
I love him. He plays with no fear. I feel like we allow him to get away with so many more mistakes. So it's like, oh, it's just Coleman. He can do that. It's just Coleman. I love him.
By stocking him, that dude's going to be a player. That's a four-year solid player. We're going to be really happy to have him when it's all said and done. He's got a lot of skills.
Yeah, just keep beefing up in the weight room.
Dude, once he gets an off-season with Fletch, watch out.
That's classic. That's dangerous.
Yeah. Watch out.
He'll start looking like BVB.
Yeah, no, that's a classic eyes emoji, like Illini Twitter take.
Mid-July, you just see it come in. Oh, off-season with Fletch going well.
Going real well. Like, they get that picture.
Side-by-side.
Wait till you see this kid on the Italy trip, okay?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I'm very excited for Coleman. He's going to be a player. I'm actually really curious. Now, Kofi ended up with a game. I think it was like 21. He had a double-double.
21 and 13.
But in the first 4, 5, 6-plus minutes, Illinois was scoreless. You know, they were doing a really good job on Kofi, I think. Explain to me in the X's and O's fashion. All I know is it looked like they were double-teaming him. And just explain to me what that looked like, because I don't understand.
Yeah, that's the book. You mentioned the book is out on Curbelo. The book is out on Kofi as well. Is you double him, because he's not a good passer, particularly. He'll try to muscle through the double team before he'll find the open player on the arc. And that's clearly what Nebraska's strategy was. And I mean, you saw we went down 9-0, but the way we got back was a quick stretch of three-pointers. Yeah. Because when you double in the post, then that leaves the perimeter open. That's kind of the trade-off you have to do. Then the game gets kind of in a different flow, and then you know, you're able to find ways through your ball screen offense to negate the double team. And Kofi, one thing Kofi's really got better at is recognizing it's coming and getting and making his post move quick as opposed to waiting for the double team to come. Now, again, there's times when he should recognize the double team's coming and pass the ball out to where that double team came from, as opposed to trying to just plow through three guys. But I think Scott Van Pelt said this after the one of the recent games. He's like Colin Sheff. I mean,
yeah.
He's had
Iowa is after Iowa, yeah.
Yeah, he's had 13 dunks in two games. That's just crazy.
Yeah, that is wild. Yeah, I think he has gotten a little better. I don't think he's turning it over quite as much in the paint. I think he does still try to muscle it through, and sometimes it works. But yes, he is realizing like, oh, I'm getting doubled. I can pass it out, and I know we got those like back to back threes to make it, you know, 9-6 after 9-0. But I was just curious because they were doing a good job of shutting him down early, and it looked like they were just gonna have to shoot threes all day.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of been an Achilles heel of this team. Sometimes is just sloppy entry passes and not being able to pass a couple times around to then get it to Kofi in the paint. It's either turning the ball over or just not finding Kofi. So Nebraska did a good job at preventing that.
As good as we, you know, obviously we are a very good half court team when we don't turn the ball over. We are in the top 10th percentile of all college Division I teams in scoring in the half court because Kofi is so effective in the post. So I don't want to belabor the point that he's not a good passer, but you touched on my biggest pet peeve of the season is post feeds from poor angles. It's just, without getting into too much of a detail, it's rarely a good idea to throw a bounce pass into the post from the top of the key or off that angle a little bit. You can throw a lob over the top on occasion, but from the top of the key, it's never a good idea to throw a post pass. Those have to come from the wing, and we just keep trying to force it in there. It just drives me batty.
Yeah.
The other thing that drives me crazy is the offensive rebounds that other teams get. Is it strictly just a size thing where you have Demonte or Grandison as the four or the three, and it's just us like not having the size to be able to grab that? Or is it something else that you're seeing? We're too tight on the people on the perimeter?
You know, it's usually luck. I mean, there's a lot of it. You obviously have to have size, and we are limited in size outside of Kofi. But we're a good offensive rebound team because we coach our scheme is to crash the offensive rebounding glass. That's kind of one of Underwood's things. But really, you're talking about 6 to 8 offensive rebounds a game most times, and half of those are usually just a dumb lucky bounce. Right. A long three bounces long and bounces off someone's leg and goes out of bounds, and their team gets the ball. That's still an offensive rebound. So you're talking about 3 or 4 offensive rebounds a game that come down to effort or size, but that those possessions can mean, and those are the possessions that coaches say every possession matters. But I think tonight there was a little bit of both. There were a lot of, I thought, lucky bounces that Nebraska got, but I also thought there was a lot of lazy blockouts, and Nebraska's length bothered us. I mean, if that's a good, I was going to say earlier, you know, as bad as Nebraska is, they do represent the type of team that bothers us. Size on the wings bothers us. So, and they have that. They are particularly good players, but they still have size. So that's the kind of team that if we get into the tournament and we play a team that is talented and has size on the wings, like, I don't know, a Baylor, then
the definition of that team,
we're going to struggle unless we shoot the ball well. And that's always the equalizer, is how well you shoot the ball. But Nebraska is the type of team that gives us trouble from a size standpoint, and that showed on the second chance points and their offensive rebound.
I wonder if we were also bothered by Teddy Allen's awful tattoos.
Oh, come on. We said we weren't going to talk about it.
I mean, he looks like Post Malone out there.
Who's the guy on the Nuggets that had all the tattoos? The Birdman. Birdman.
Allen Iverson.
Did Teddy have a face tattoo or not?
It was got neck.
He's running out of real estate.
Yes. There is a literal face on his neck.
That's a face tattoo, I think. Yeah.
I think, yeah, there was a lot. Were we distracted by it?
As a viewer.
Did Illinois play worse because we were distracted by the tattoos?
Yeah, it's just the energy, you know?
The energy. When we're a minute and a half behind.
You know what's also crazy is McGowan's went 5 for 20 from the field.
It's just ridiculous.
It did not seem
he
like
shot 20 times.
He missed 15 shots, especially considering he hit that one from ridiculous range.
Oh, was that that three there?
Yeah,
off the pass there. Yeah, that was.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, but 75%
except when you miss 15
yeah.
of them. Yes,
he made that shot. But that kind of shot selection is why he shoots 5 for 20 and why. He and Fred Hoiberg have not had the best relationship, from what I understand.
Yeah, except he has a 5-star younger brother who they want to come.
Yeah, that's true.
Can we talk about really quick the shot that Nebraska got to send it to overtime, where they could have they held for the last shot? I never understand why shots like that at the end. It's always like a step back three. Why not drive it to the rim? Like, that was the worst possession I think either team had the entire game.
You saw Fred Hoiberg throw his mask.
Yes.
Obviously not the play he drew up. And that's back to your comment about 18 to 22-year-olds. You know, coaches can drop a play, but they're still at the mercy of these guys running the plays as it's designed. But they committed the one cardinal sin that I think every team does in college basketball too often. They wait too long to initiate.
Yes.
You should go at 10. And it was 4 seconds before they even made a dribble. So I think that was doomed from the start because they just didn't get their action going in time. But yeah, that was a brutal. That was a John Gross special right there.
Here's something interesting.
Bubble 53.
If I'm not mistaken, all five of Nebraska's starters are transfers. So I think that also is like
even Thorier. Is Thorier a starter?
No, he's not a starter.
He didn't start. So I mean, that's tough to deal with.
Transfer you.
That was Fred Hoiberg's MO at Iowa State too.
Really transfer you?
Transfer heavy guy, yeah. Huh.
But going back to that final shot, Tyler, you know what that reminded me of? Was the Arizona game 2005 where...
So many similarities, right?
No, but that last shot, they did not try to penetrate at all. They're just kind of dribbling and then shoot a really like flustered three-pointer that doesn't even hit the rim. Like... They're down 1 point and they're not trying to go to the rim.
It was a team in red against a team in orange. So many similarities.
All right. So we have Northwestern at home. We have Wisconsin on the road.
No. We have Minnesota and Michigan State.
Minnesota on the road, though, which is tough because I think I saw someone tweet today like the top five teams in the country. It goes Gonzaga, Baylor, Minnesota at home's efficiency, and then like Illinois, Ohio State. So we do have to go to a very challenging place. And then what is it, Michigan State?
Yeah,
after
at Michigan State.
At Michigan State.
That's a really tough week. I mean, let's assume for the sake of discussion that we blow out and learn from this game and really take it to Northwestern. So we're gonna put that in the win column. Then you kind of got this really. Yeah, I know, right?
Easy. They'll shoot 8% in the second half again, I'm sure.
But then you got three. I mean, your road games don't mean as much in this environment as Minnesota, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and this over the course of the week. Now, we talked about Nebraska's length and their style of players giving Illinois problems. I will say that on the flip side, we match up really well with Minnesota. They don't have that size bothers us. And, you know, obviously we saw what Kofi did to Liam Robbins the first time around. I'm not saying we're going to win by 30, but that's a team that I think we just match up better. And that happens in college basketball. There's teams that you just have better success again just because of the matchups. I think that's a same thing with Wisconsin too. I think we actually match up better with them. Not to say we're going to win all three of those games, but yeah, it's a really tough stretch, no doubt about it.
I think if we go 2-1 in this stretch and then still beat Ohio State and Michigan, you're still looking at a one seed.
Well, that would be like the best case scenario,
of course,
basically.
Of course, that is the best case scenario. But like
best case scenario is winning out.
Well, KenPom did say we're going to go 9-0 in our last nine conference.
And we haven't lost since he's joined the show. And Iowa's looked like crap.
That's true. I hate how Michigan continued to move up the standings even when they weren't playing a game. Like, they were number 3 this week. And we could fall this week in the rankings, whatever you want to call them, AP.
I don't think they're going to do that, though. Like, usually, even though maybe they should, if you win, they'll typically reward you. Like, really, losses are what's going to
happen. Yeah. For the AP poll, I agree. Although I am keenly interested in the NCAA's 16-team.
Oh, that's tomorrow, right?
Release that comes out tomorrow morning. Oh. That's really what the poll I'm wondering about.
Yeah.
Coming up next.
What's your prediction, Tyler? Where do you think we fall on that? Especially now after this game.
Are they including tomorrow? Today?
We're still solidly on our 2-line. Where we fall on that 2-line is difficult. And that's the real. It's really tough to project where this is going until we figure out what Michigan's going to do.
Yeah.
Because the way I understand the bracket rules, unless we can figure out win our way to leapfrog either Michigan or Ohio State, we're likely, whether we're a 2 or a 3, we're likely going to end up in the bracket with Baylor or Gonzaga.
Oh, no.
In Indy.
They don't want Big Ten teams being the 1 and the 2 seed.
Correct. You can't. Yeah. The rule is you can't have any teams from the same conference in the top 4 lines have to be in different regions. So if Michigan and Ohio State are ahead of us, we're automatically going to not be placed in their region. So if we want to avoid Baylor or Gonzaga until the Final Four, we have to jump one of those teams and get into on the 1-line.
Wow, that would make me so happy to see Iowa playing Gonzaga or Iowa playing Baylor.
I guess the good news is you control your own destiny because you have games against
you
both those opponents.
You absolutely do.
Yeah.
I would say yes, but again, until we know what Michigan's going to do, I mean, I don't know how many of those games they're going to make up.
Right. That's
well, you have to think about the Michigan players' academics. Jawan wants to make sure that they are going to their classes.
Yes.
That they're
online Zoom classes.
They want to make sure that they're going to that. They're the health and safety of the players because 11 games in 22 days for these types of kids.
That's a lot of games.
It's too much for
them. Well, they could have played a game a couple days ago.
They could have, but no. You got to think about it now. We're past that. It was on to Nebraska, as Brad said.
Mm-hmm. Why? Where's the Big Ten? Like.
It's off the highway near the Fogo de Chão.
Next to the Waffle House.
Next to the Hofbräu House.
The Hofbräu House, yes. Meet us there if you're a Chicago listener after the Final Four game. We will we'll buy a round for everyone, and then we'll go to the Sugar Factory. What is it?
Yep.
Sweet Factory? And then the Laugh Factory.
Yeah. A little indoor skydiving.
Yes, shout out Rosemont. We love you.
One more question I have, Tyler. We can maybe wrap this up. Is playing, I guess, like a little bit of a hypothetical. Let's say we do, I guess, go like 5-1 or whatever during that stretch.
Or whatever.
And ultimately, we're on the like 1-2 seed line. We make it all the way to the Final Four. And for whatever reason, Gonzaga, Baylor both kind of flame out. We end up winning the championship.
Johnny, Jesus
Christ. Wow.
I know this is a big
hypothetical ever.
Okay. Here's my question.
Hypothetically, Io comes back because he wants to go back to back.
My question is, would you still consider this to be the best Illinois team? Because in my mind, I'm still like, I don't know, this 2005 team played an insane UNC team and went 37-2, and the 89 team had a much better regular season than a team that was 9-5 at one point.
Yeah, part of you's got to be rooting against them.
No. This is an easy answer. It's okay to be the best team in Illinois history, but still not be able to beat other historical teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we win a championship, this will be the team that is remembered forever.
Yeah.
Even more than my team in 89, even more than 2005, because you get that championship, then that you're in the history books.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that if they played 10 games that the 05 team wouldn't beat this team 7 to 10 times, and same with the 89 team? Probably not. But if this team were to go on to a national championship, they would be considered the best team in Illinois history. I don't think there's any way to debate that. I just don't think you can say, well, just because this team wouldn't have beat this team had they played, and that's a tough game, a tough thing to try and figure out. But let's just win a championship, and then we can have that debate.
I know it's a big if. But
I love,
like, just looking at
I'd
other.
I'd rather beat Baylor and Gonzaga.
No, that would that would definitely be more fun. But, like, we were looking at the Michigan team in 2018. It's like they played. They went 14 seed, then 6 seed, then 7 seed, then 8 seed, then 9 seed, or then 9 seed, then 11 seed, and they were in the championship.
I would love that. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Hang me a banner.
Like, sometimes you just got to win. Sometimes you just got to survive in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. John, we saw tonight it's not that easy to do. Yeah.
This was Johnny texting us Jalen Brunson's 2018 stat line at Villanova and then sending us Io's stat line. Io's stat line's obviously better now.
Yeah, I'll read it to you guys.
But it was those two stat lines, and then you look at it, and then the Villanova team's adjusted efficiency or whatever is like 3 points right now lower than what Gonzaga or Baylor was. So it's just a completely different year. A championship is a championship no matter what. That's it just depends on the teams that you're playing against.
Yeah. Fine, Johnny. The text was player A, 18.9 points per game, 4.6 assists per game, 3.1 rebounds per game, 52% field goal percentage, 40.8% three-point percentage.
You guys writing this down?
80.2 free throw percentage.
Did you get all that?
Player B, 21.2 points a game, 5.1 assists per game.
You lost me.
6.4 rebounds per game, 48.6% free field goal.
Player B. Okay.
More points, more assists, more rebounds, better 3-point percentage than Jalen Brunson. And that doesn't even take into account tonight's 31-point performance.
Just missing one thing.
So even though you got your Wooden Award and your national championship, joke's on you. We got player B.
He's got time to win all those awards still. He's got plenty of time.
That reminds me to go vote for Io on the Wooden Award because fan vote is obviously involved.
So I love seeing Io's mom always tweets it out. It's amazing.
Yeah. But to the original point, if you win a national championship 5 years from now, no one's going to say, "Well, yeah, but you didn't beat Baylor, you didn't beat Gonzaga." You're just going to point to that banner, and
I won't be coherent in 5 years to make that argument.
I'm still getting over 1915, baby.
I do appreciate how we started with tremendous angst over barely beating a bad Nebraska team in overtime. Now we're debating on whether this is the greatest team in Illinois.
No, these are therapeutic. Like you said, the listeners, they want to hear positivity after wins.
Our tweet tomorrow needs to be like, we eventually got to national championship talk.
Right.
It just takes
you
a
go
second.
From beating the 157th ranked team in overtime to, you know, not even a hypothetical from Johnny of winning the national championship, comparing Jalen Brunson to Io. I don't know how it would be any other way. How about that for a Friday night? I was pretty entertained. That was pretty fun, right? Thank you, Tyler, for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Love it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, hopefully we'll catch you on a game where, like you said, a little bit more fun, like the Iowa game or something where it's a blowout. But thanks so much, everyone, for listening. This is Maddie signing out. ILL.
All right.